This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery life right now? I sometimes find myself feeling a little drained after meeting up with groups of people, even my best friends. I can't quite put my finger on why that is. I know I didn't always feel that way, but it can be easy sometimes to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Dialing in and finding the right balance is going to be different for each person, whether you're somebody who thrives around people or if you prefer more alone time. Either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy is not just for people who've experienced major traumas. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, and it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, and the service is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a quick questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Thursday, June 1st, 2023. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ, let's get into it. What have you been doing recently?
So I'm not going to show my hand too much, but I will be having a piece coming out in time with the Barbie movie release, where I am digging really deep into the history and the lore of Barbie. I've been watching a lot of the direct-to-DVD movies. There are 42 of them, in case anyone was curious.
Holy cow.
So I am just kind of living my Barbie fantasy right now, which has been great. And I've been doing that in between guesting on a lot of other film podcasts. I was recently on one called 1999, the podcast, where they talk about movies from 1999. And I talked about American Movie, an incredible documentary, if you've not seen it. And recently did an episode that'll come out in a few months for Podcast Like It's. And I think they're doing 1992 right now. So we talked about John Woo's Hard Boiled, a movie that I am a very loud champion of. So I've just been kind of, all of my free time is fun, but is also like sort of tangentially related to work at this point.
Yeah. That's the cross we bear, BJ, getting into, you know, the entertainment journalism profession and like basically making watching movies and TV shows and talking about them all the time, part of our daily work life. So
it's really hard not to watch a movie and then immediately think like, well, how can I pitch this?
Yeah. Yep. That's the curse that we all have. So something that is not cursed, how's that for a terrible transition? My mom just retired from, she was an elementary school teacher for 19 years, past 19 years, and she just retired. So my sister and her husband drove up from Central Florida to help celebrate my mom's retirement at the end of last week. And that was like it's a big moment for her because she's just been, you know, grinding it out, working the whole time through. And now it's like endless summer. So I'm excited for her. And I know she listens to the podcast sometimes. So
congratulations, Mom. Ben's mom. And as somebody who used to teach elementary school, Godspeed. Because I know that is hard. In 19 years, it's incredible.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump into what we've been reading. What have you been reading recently, BJ?
I am currently reading the book Girls Make Movies by Mallory O'Meara and Jen Vaughn. Mallory O'Meara also wrote the books The Lady from the Black Lagoon and Girly Drinks. She also does like Reading Glasses podcast. So she's kind of like a figure that exists, I think, for a lot of like film genre people. You might recognize the name. But Girls Make Movies is what I believe is the first choose your own adventure nonfiction book. And what it is it is a guide geared towards middle grade young girls on how to make a movie. So, you know, you go through the book and there's all these resources on how to make a movie. What does it take? What do you need to know? What resources do you need available? And you can kind of choose your own adventure to like make your own movie. And sometimes things go wrong. Sometimes you go over budget. Sometimes something doesn't work out and you have to start over again. But it's a really fascinating read, even though it's meant for younger readers. I've been having so much fun with it. And it is such a love letter to movies and an attempt to try and foster a love of making movies for young girls and all of the different production roles that entails.
That sounds awesome. So I'm a little confused about exactly how it works. Like when you say you go over budget, like what does that look like on the page? Because so, is it an instruction manual for like, okay, turn to page 37. Now it's time to do this. And then like you're actually, you know, as the reader supposed to get out there and actually do the thing?
I mean, you can use it as like a practical guide, or you can just do it as kind of like a little adventure for yourself through the book. But you know, you can go to a page and it'll be like, okay, well, what kind of movie do you want to make? If you want to make a horror movie, you go to this page, and then you go to that page and it's like, okay, do you want to make practical effects or do you want CGI? Wow. And if you want CGI, then you go to this page, and then there's all the information on like what kind of team you're going to need to hire or what kind of resources you're going to need in order to make that happen. It's really fantastic and a lot of fun. And Jen Vaughn's illustrations are really cool and they're really inclusive as well. So there's all types of different people and bodies presented. So there's probably a character that every girl can look at and be like, oh, that's what I want to look like when I grow up. Or, oh, that's what my aunt looks like. It's a blast. I love this book and I'm going to buy it for every little girl in my life for Christmas. So sorry to spoil your gifts. You're all getting it.
I was going to say, it sounds like a perfect gift. What a cool concept for a book. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
It's called Girls Make Movies. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes so people can check that out themselves. All right, let's get into what we've been watching. BJ, I watched all of Jury Duty, the show on Freevee, which is Amazon's free ad-supported tier. And I feel like I'm fairly late to the game on Jury Duty. The show sort of like popped off in a big way, I don't know, a month or so ago, and I'm just now getting around to it. So maybe our listeners have already heard of this, but maybe there are some folks out there who don't know what this is. And it's basically I don't really like reality TV, just to start to, you know, I guess foreground this conversation. I worked in reality TV for a long time. So like the quote unquote magic has been ruined for me. And so I haven't really watched anything that I would call reality TV in well over a decade at this point. But Jury Duty is kind of a reality show and kind of not. I mean, it's a reality show, but not in like the ultra annoying formulaic ways that a lot of reality shows can fall into. So the basic premise is there's one guy and his name is Ronald Gladden. He's an unsuspecting person who seems to have signed up for to be a part of a filmed documentary style project about the process of what it's like to go be on a jury and like sit there and deliberate and do the whole thing start to finish. And he thinks that he is on a real case, but every single person in the jury, the judge, all of the bailiffs, the, you know, everybody else that he interacts with over this entire process is an actor. And James Marsden plays himself, like a sort of heightened version of himself. And he is on the jury as well. And it is just an absolute delight of a show. I think it's 8 episodes, and it's fantastic because it starts out very low key, and then over the course of the episodes, situations just escalate to ridiculous levels, and it really feels like this dance of like how these filmmakers, the people behind orchestrating the show in like a Truman Show-esque fashion, how far they'll be able to stretch this concept without sort of tipping off this lead guy that he's actually a part of like an elaborate ruse. So it's so much fun, and it's really like, you know, I think some of that might sound on paper like it's kind of a prank show or something, and it's not really like that at all. It's much more good-hearted than that, and that's the thing that I sort of came away really appreciating from the show, is just like the the good-natured aspect of it. And it really just feels like sort of a warm hug of a show, almost like shades of like a Parks and Rec in that kind of way a little bit. So I know you've watched this as well, BJ. What are your jury duty thoughts?
Oh, I love this show so much. And I'm with you. I was really skeptical at first because shows like Joe Millionaire, I think, kind of ruined the like one guy knows something that no one else knows, or the inverse of that in this case. I've been a little soured on that premise, but there is something so beautiful about this. And Ronald is kind of like just, they found lightning in a bottle with that guy. He is so incredible to watch. And this is one of those shows where I feel like people are going to want more of it, but I don't want it. Like, it's such a perfect season. I want it to just stay here and not get sullied in any way, because it is, you're right when you said it's a delight. It is such a delightful watch. It's so funny, but it never feels mean-spirited. And I wish that more reality show felt like this, because a lot of it is super mean-spirited, but this isn't. And it's just it's a very comfy watch.
Yeah, totally. And I'm not even sure how more episodes would even work, because the final episode of Jury Duty is like pulling the curtain back to Ronald, the main guy, and like explaining, you know, everything that happened, and like introducing him to the real people, the actors that he was sort of co-starring with this whole time. And like, it's all really, there's no way that they could do it again to the same guy. So, like you said, he is sort of like this, unicorn figure of like the perfect guy with like the perfect temperament for this kind of project, because this could have gone off the rails in so many different ways if they had somebody, you know, the wrong person at the center of the show. I'm kind of with you. I feel like leave well enough alone and just, you know, have it exist as this like really delightful little thing that, you know, this nice little present that we all got, and not try to go back and like, you know, stretch it beyond what it's actually capable of sustaining. So, it's on Freevee, which means you do have to watch a couple ads during the episode, which I'm not used to as somebody who like subscribes to the upper tier things. And you know, that was kind of like a little bit of a reality check, but it wasn't too bad. It was fairly painless. I think there's only like two ads per episode or something. So good stuff there. Jury Duty on Freevee. And then I think you and I both, BJ, watched the American Gladiators documentary, which has aired over the past two nights on ESPN. And I think you can probably stream it now on ESPN Plus if you have a subscription to that. So why don't you tell me what you thought, BJ, about the American Gladiators documentary, this two-part series?
So, full disclosure, I am obsessed with American Gladiators. Every once in a while, Pluto TV will have a channel just dedicated to reruns of American Gladiators, and I will watch it nonstop. I have a vintage, like, plastic Gemini mask that is decoration in my house because I love American Gladiators.
Wow.
I really liked the documentary series. I think it could have gone harder, personally, but I've kind of accepted that these ESPN docs, especially when they're dealing with anything like an American Gladiators or anything that they do with like WWE, they do sanitize it a little bit, because you don't want to go really hard into some of like the questionable ethics of a show like American Gladiators. So I wish it would have went a little harder, but as somebody who has such an affinity for the show, I loved seeing the behind the scenes stuff and kind of learning more about it. Yeah, that's just how I feel about it.
Yeah, I grew up watching the show, but haven't really thought about it, you know, since I was a kid. So this was really illuminating for me in terms of like how it came to be. And like the origin story of American Gladiators is pretty fascinating. I feel like this is one of those things that like, even if you don't particularly have a relationship to the show, or don't even really like sports that much, this is just a fascinating story about control and like shaping narratives. And like, there's this guy at the center of it named Johnny Ferraro. He's like this Vegas figure. He was an Elvis impersonator who ended up sort of wresting control of this, of the name, the sort of brand of American Gladiators. And like the over the course of these two episodes, you find out the lengths that he went to in order to get the show made over the years. And like his ambition and sort of single-minded drive to get this thing done, but also like the relationships that he left in his wake in order to achieve that goal, and the personal toll that took on his life. And he's kind of, yeah, a really like fascinating figure that I feel like people might be interested in like hearing a story like that, even if you didn't particularly care for.
Oh, totally. The sports, I think people love these like carny characters, as I will call them, like the Johnny Ferraros, the Joe Exotics, the Vince McMahons of the world. Like, it's all carny. Like, that's what it is. And the fact that people like this exist are so fascinating to me. And he's a good one.
There's so much cool, like behind the scenes footage of all of the games and stuff too. Like they do a lot of interviews with like former gladiators and former contestants, which I thought was fascinating. And yeah, like the behind the scenes stuff, like they show a lot of the injuries and things that happened that like I never remember seeing, if they ever showed any of that stuff on TV. I doubt that they did. They probably sanitized that, you know, to an inch of its life.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah, like some of that stuff is just, it was just cool to see, to be like taken fully behind the curtain. I do wish, like you said, that they would have gone a little bit harder and maybe pushed for a little bit more like emotional clarity at the very, very end, because it ends in a way that I found unexpected, but kind of abruptly so. So without spoilers, I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, a fascinating thing. You know, I think each episode is around an hour and a half. So you're looking at, yeah, 3 hours total for the whole thing. Maybe they could have tightened that up into just like a, you know, 2.5 hour movie or something like that. But yeah, if you're looking for something that is like a sort of fun, like look behind the curtain, that is, like I said, more than just a sports thing. It's much more, you know, about like America and power and like, man, also like the idea, it's especially relevant right now because of the writer's strike going on, how much the show sort of was born out of the necessity to put quote unquote reality TV on television at the time when it became a big deal. And also like, there's a lot in there about like workers' rights and like the way that Johnny Ferraro and some of the folks who were running the show treated the gladiators and like didn't pay them particularly well. And like all these, you know, big concepts that are like floating around in the headlines today are very much like at the front of mind for us, all factor into this show and the story in a really good way. So yeah, the American Gladiators documentary, I think, is probably streaming on ESPN Plus. They might be doing like a repeat of it on ESPN if you still subscribe to a cable package or something like that as well. So sounds like BJ and I both recommend that you check that out. BJ, what else have you been watching?
So I watched the Letterkenny holiday special. Between the seasons, they always do a different holiday, and this time it was for Victoria Day. And it is, if you like Letterkenny, you'll like the special, is the best way that I'll describe it. But it did introduce characters from Australia and New Zealand and have them doing like sort of argumentative, quick wordplay. But it's, instead of it being so painfully Canadian like in Letterkenny, it's Australian and New Zealand, and it is really delightful and hilarious.
This reminds me of like the werewolves in the What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes,
kind of thing.
It is very much like that kind of energy, but with like the Letterkenny wordplay of just like battling with wit. Really funny. There's also a great running gag with Glenn being like certified in fireworks. Again, like if you like Letterkenny, you'll like the holiday special. It's really funny. It was also very unexpected. I love that the Letterkenny holiday specials are always like weird holidays. Like they did one for International Women's Day 1 year. And it's like, that's like a weird day for there to be a holiday special. And I'm so glad they have it. So yeah, if you like Letterkenny, definitely check it out. And then
do you know
the
if that's
other-
on Hulu?
It's on Hulu in the States, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And it like kind of got dropped unceremoniously. Like it just was there. It was like, oh, by the way, new episode of Letterkenny. And I was like, that's weird. Usually there's like a more to do about this. So yeah. I ended up catching it a week after it released. But, you know, worth it. Always good.
Yeah, excellent. Actually, before we go on, let's take a quick break. I forgot to do that earlier. Let's take a quick break, sure. And then we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, BJ, you've been watching one other thing that you wanted to talk about.
I am watching the Clone High second season, or reboot, whatever you want to consider it. And Lord Miller just don't miss for me. Like, I loved Clone High when it came out. I was 12 when the first season happened. So, like, arguably, I was probably a little too young to be watching it, but I was watching John Waters movies before I was 10, so it's fine. And I loved Clone High, and I really love what they're doing with this new season. I like that they have successfully found a way to bridge the progress that has been made socially, because the first season of Clone High is very much like 2000s, like birth of edgelord humor that we would see from that decade, and that doesn't fly anymore. And mm-hmm. they have been really good at finding how to marry the heart of that original season, but catering it towards our more like progressive and respectful sensibilities now, without losing what makes the show so funny. And I'm just having a blast with it. I think 3 episodes are out now, and just it's great. It's so great.
That's awesome. That sounds like a sort of a difficult tightrope to walk when, like, your show was forged in a totally different comedic era, and then bringing it back when almost everything has changed in such a massive way in terms of, like, what is acceptable or you know, thought of as, like, correct in society, I guess, or whatever. Yeah, that's fascinating. I know that Brad was talking about this, I think, earlier this week, maybe last week, about he's going back and watching the original Clone High because he'd never seen it in terms of in advance of watching these new ones. And I've never seen any of Clone High stuff at all. So would you recommend that, BJ, like going back to the beginning, and or do you feel like this new series is a good enough entry point where you can just catch up with the new stuff and not feel like you missed too much?
I think so. They've done a really good job at kind of catching everybody up to speed, even if you didn't see the first season, which I really, really like a lot as well, because I think that's also difficult. But if you've never seen Clone High, I think my honest suggestion would be to watch what they're doing now, get a taste for it, and then go back, because I think something that happens a lot is when people go back to something, especially when it's like the late 90s, early 2000s, because it was such a specific time period where being edgy and offensive and in bad taste was not just encouraged, it was almost mandated for a lot of stuff. So if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of like cultural whiplash when mm-hmm. you watch it and you're like, whoa, that is really out of pocket. And there are some out of pocket stuff in the first season, like just knowing that. But yeah, I think it's so much more impressive when you see what they've done now and then go back to see where they, like, how they've managed this transition. Like, mm-hmm. it's just been blowing my mind. There is, like, a little in-joke that I thought was super funny. They had a table at the Clone High cafeteria that's the canceled corner, and the people sitting at the canceled corner were Marilyn Manson, John Wayne, and then Mr. Sheetman. Mr. Sheetman is a teacher from the first season of Clone High who was voiced by Andy Dick, somebody who has famously been canceled. So, like, the character doesn't talk, but I saw him at the table and I was like, you know exactly what you're doing. This is really funny.
That's great. That sounds like, yeah, classic Lord and Miller humor. So that's great. Are they, like, still very much involved with the creative voice here, or have they, like, sort of passed the baton on to, like, other showrunners, or what's their involvement?
So they're very much still involved. They co-wrote the first episode, and I know that they've been, executive producing and overseeing a lot of it. I think they may have written additional episodes, but they do have a writing team, and they've also introduced some new voices. They've also done some recasting to be, you know, more appropriate. Krista Miller, who people know from a lot of the Bill Laurent shows, she originally voiced Cleopatra on the first season. She no longer does. They gave her an entirely new character, which I think was really, really smart. They also introduced Ayo Itabiri from The Bear is Harriet Tubman, even though that character is, like, sort of in the first season, but not really. She's, like, a throwaway in the first season. Now she's, like, prominent this season. Mm. So that, I think, is really cool, that it just shows that they've grown up and they've accepted that we're in a new time and comedy's different now. But at the same time, it's still very much feels like the show. JFK is still a huge douche. Abe Lincoln is still struggling. Joan of Arc is still struggling. And I just really like it. They also introduced Topher Buss, a new character who is Christopher Columbus, but he doesn't want anyone to know he's Christopher Columbus because obviously Christopher Columbus is a genocidal monster. So it's all, and he's like an edgelord online who like trolls people on TikTok. It's great. Like, it's so good.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, if people weren't sold, I think they are after Topher Bus. That's great. Wow.
I like when he introduced, I was like, this is so good.
Awesome. All right. Let's get into what we've been eating. Have you been eating anything interesting lately?
So I have a confession. I am part of the problem. I don't hate Max, the streaming app. The interface is still not great. There's definitely bugs, but now I have 35 seasons of Guy's Grocery Games at my disposal. So I've been watching a lot of it and then trying my hand at like doing some of them. I made like a cranberry glaze for like a Thanksgiving style burger and it was really good.
So again, BJ, like since I'm not a reality person, I don't even know what Guy's Grocery Games is. This Guy Fieri?
It is Guy Fieri. Okay. So obviously Guy Fieri is known for just being a personality and whatnot. Guy's Grocery Games, in my opinion, is like the best food competition show on TV for a multitude of reasons. One, the idea is kind of marrying it with like a supermarket sweep type thing where they have to use ingredients that you can find in a supermarket. So it's not like Iron Chef where somebody has this like weird ingredient you've never heard of and cost $10 million. It's like, nope, here's your challenge. Make it at a supermarket. And some of the challenges are like, you have $15 to feed five people. What are you going to do? So it's very applicable to people who are watching at home. You can actually do these sorts of things, which I love. But also he brings in a lot of the chefs from like Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives and to give them further exposure to help their small businesses. So a lot of the competitors are people from like small town restaurants that are like people that are like, I had to sell my food truck during the pandemic because people weren't going there. And it's like, cool, then come on my show and win $20,000 and you can buy a new food truck. Like, yeah. Guy Fieri gets a lot of hate because he's a weird guy, but he just does so many good things. And this show is just, everything is very positive. It's very fun. And I feel like I can make this stuff at home, and that is a good thing because otherwise I'm just going to DoorDash everything.
So what have you made from the show?
Okay, so I have made a cranberry glaze for a burger that I learned how to make. That was really good. I learned how to make a spicy peanut sauce using like Goober's peanut butter and jelly in the same jar.
Wow.
So I've been doing that. And then my next thing that I'm going to make is somebody made a like heightened take on the Elvis burger of the peanut butter, banana, and bacon, but they made it spicy and they made the banana like Bananas Foster. So there's like rum in it too. And I was like, well, I have to make this. So that's going to be my next project. Hopefully I don't burn my house down.
Okay. Yeah. Best of luck with that. So that's on Max. And then I forgot to mention that Clone High is also on Max. So yeah, yes. You can just hop right back and forth between those if you're BJ. the last thing we have here, BJ, is what we've been playing. And it says on this doc that we share that you've been playing a lot of Grindstone. And I have to admit, I've never heard of Grindstone either. So what is that?
So Grindstone is a video game. I'm not entirely sure which platforms it's available on. It's definitely on the Switch, which is my like main gaming console. It functions similarly to like a Candy Crush or a Bejeweled sort of puzzle game, but you play a Viking and you kill these like little monster things. So it's also like playful gore, as I'll call it. Like it's very cartoony. It's not gross, but when you kill things, like they bleed and they explode. And the idea is that you collect these little diamond stones and you can use those to unlock more levels and that you get bigger challenges from different monsters. And it's a nice puzzle game, but it's fun and the music's good and the graphics are cool. And it doesn't have 10 million ads popping up every second the way that a lot of the mobile games of this type do. So I can just kind of kill as much time as I need to, just killing creeps. And that's what they're called. The monsters are creeps. So killing creeps and collecting stones and bones and, you know, making cool, cool battle axes and shields and potions and all things I need so I can do better in harder levels. If you like any of those types of puzzle games, this is so addictive and fun and has like a playful sensibility, but it doesn't feel like a baby game the way some of these can. I love it. It's great.
Okay. Yeah. So that's called Grindstone. Have you played Tears of the Kingdom yet? The new Zelda game?
I have not. That is going to be the game my wife dives her entire life into, and then I won't see her until it's done. and luckily she's been starting a new job, so she hasn't had time yet, but it's taunting us both.
Okay. Yeah, I've played the first game, but I've not played Tears of the Kingdom yet. And I actually had to like stop, I don't know, about halfway through, but maybe a little further than that, because I just got overwhelmed. Like I reached a point where I was just like, I don't know where to go or what to do at this point, because this world is so big and so expansive and so you have so much freedom that mm-hmm. I just like kind of, I don't know. I wish I had a little bit more guardrails in that instance, because I just kind of like ran out of steam with the game. But maybe I'll pick it back up, because I know
I'm
people
the
are
same
talking
way.
So
I like open world games just like overwhelm me because I have too many options. Before the new one came out, my wife did like a replay of Breath of the Wild, and she wanted to complete it, like completionist, get everything that you need. So I just like watched her play for like weeks, and I just sat here like I could never do this. I would lose my mind. There would be, I would just be running in the sand screaming, please tell me, give me an objective.
Yes. Amazing. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of the things that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe to our newsletter, send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Don't forget to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.